Spoiler alert, I watch a lot of Bravo, and when I'm not watching Bravo, I'm sitting in the cloth having a moment of spiritual growth, and when that's not happening, I'm living here in New York where there is a lot to do and not a lot of time to do it. The last thing that I want to be thinking about, let alone worrying about, is my hair. Now, I have wavy hair naturally. It also has color processing, which is surprising because I am a spiritual blonde. And as a result, I don't want to have to worry about frizz. That's why I love Way's anti-frizz cream. It works for my hair texture. It works for having wavy hair. It smells great. There are notes of bergamot, Italian lemon. You guys know I just went to Italy. It was for moments like this, violet and more. Having used a lot of products in my hair in the past, I don't like a heavy feeling, especially when you have wavy hair. That's incredibly important, which is why I love the anti-frizz cream. It makes my hair look like me just a little bit better. Way's new anti-frizz cream provides immediate frizz control that lasts up to 72 hours. It helps reduce and repair split ends. And according to a consumer perception study, 90% of participants agreed that their hair looks less frizzy. And I would like to know what that consumer perception study has to say about some original cast members of The Real Housewives of New York. You'll be way obsessed with Way's bestsellers. They're leave-in conditioner, detox shampoo, hair oil, gloss, and so much more. Frizz-free up your schedule with Way. Go to theouai.com and enter promo code Andy for 15% off any product. That's theouai.com, promo code Andy. C'est bon. I'm in my spiritual mid-20s, but forever blonde.
Winter may be ending soon, but I'll always be a cold bitch.
I may not be facing decades in jail, but somehow I'm more stressed out than Jen Cha.
Where I love a thinker and I love the beginning of a conversation.
Which yeah.
Is what I would call that tagline.
Wow.
And you know what, guys? No pressure, but I do have to say that I feel very strongly this is going to be an iconic episode.
Oh, great.
So just no pressure. Just come on through, is what I have to say.
Come on through.
You guys, it's Andy's Girls. It's episode. I truly have no idea. I think it's 292, but I have, in fact, had a glass and a half of wine. Mm. And I'm so excited to be joined by two of my favorite people. Every time we talk, every time we deep dive, every time we see each other IRL, because spoiler alert, there is apparently a world out there.
There is.
And we see each other in it. I am filled with such delight. It is a pleasure, an honor, a thrill to have back here on the People's Couch a la Zoom, the hosts of the amazing podcast Come Through, Queen Dan Calabrese and Brendan Davis. Welcome back, my loves.
Thank you for having us. We're good. We are fresh off of our own little summer house, or winter house, rather. Wow.
Yeah.
It was like 66 degrees in New York City, no less than like 3 days ago. So it could be winter or summer.
Yeah, it gets confusing.
The depths of end of Feb. Yeah, 100%. So, Brendan, let's you introduce yourself, then Dan, so people know the voices, the folks behind the voice.
This is Brendan. I've got the gayer voice.
I think that's arguable, because I'm Dan and I have a little bit more of a lisp than you do. So
okay.
Oh.
Yeah. So there you go.
Oh. Okay, interesting. So kind of a tie?
Maybe.
Yes.
What we're saying, kind of a tie.
Listeners, you decide.
Different shades of gay, I think.
Into it. So where did you guys go? Where you were just having like a little ski bunny weekend, or adventure? I don't know how long you were gone.
I mean, we were inspired by Paige DeSorbo and the gang. We did our own little winter house, Brendan and myself and some of our friends and husband, and we headed on out to the Pocono area, somewhere in Pennsylvania, maybe like 2.5 hours outside of New York City. So yeah.
Oh. Yeah.
Do you guys ski? Are you skiers? Are Ooh. You ski folk?
Well, Brendan,
we frolic?
Brendan's answer is shorter.
Gemma Lodge King.
No, Brendan thought about tubing and then the stars did not align for that, which was probably for the best.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
What happened? Were there no tubes? Were you like, we're missing a tube here?
By the time we got there, they were like, it's going to be 2 hours. And I was like, I'd rather just go have a Bloody Mary in the lodge. And that was that.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
And I skied like once as a child, got the flu while I was skiing. And then that was like a traumatic experience. So I never skied again. Then I learned to snowboard in college. In law school, fell and hit my head and got a concussion where I like thought I was like
Princess Diana.
No, I thought I was Michelle Tanner in Full House in the final episode where she's like
the horse.
Yes, mm-hmm. yes. Where she's like who is everyone? But then that all worked out fine. So then I like took a break from that. We now doing skiing, obviously wearing helmets on the Bunny Hill. Just hopping along with the youngins in a group class settings.
Wow. I mean, I have to say, I am not a my brother back in the day was a big snowboarder. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
We did the ski stuff. My parents paid for me to go skiing in like junior high at Mount St. Anne in Quebec. And I, Brendan, lived my best life in the lodge. I had so many hot chocolates. I had croissant. Mm-hmm. Like it was. I had a wonderful time skiing. I had not once. I think I bunny yeah. sloped it or whatever. Yeah. And then I was like, I'm good. We did do the tubing. We did mm-hmm. do right. the tubing.
I love looking at the snow and pretending I am Lindsay Hubbard. And that's about it.
Mm. No, the vibes are great. They got like the big fires out. Like when you walk in, like people are just hanging out. It's like a good vibe when you enter the snow area.
Did you guys rent a house? What did you mm-hmm. do?
Yeah. We did a long weekend renting a house. Like a friend of mine had recently like purchased a place, renovated it, and we were like one of the first guests to stay at the house. So that was exciting.
It was great.
Oh my God, I'm going to get the info. I'm sure this is, you guys, we're getting a little walkthrough of a winter wonderland. I need to get the info after this to pretend that I have disposable income. because maybe instead of my rent for March, I'm sure. going to go skiing or whatever. I'm into it.
Do
I
it.
Think that would be, you know, Mr. Landlord, if you're listening, it's an establishment I'm staying at. I'm sure that counts for something spiritually.
Spiritually,
it does
yes.
count as a residence. So listen, there's so much going on. There's so much content. There's so many things happening, but we will get to that. I have a dumb question that I'm sure I have asked you both multiple times. And I'm thinking about it because you've done those Patreon episodes for Come Through Queen, which everybody needs to subscribe to and support. And you've talked about most powerful housewives,
right.
most influential housewives. You've gone through the list. And here's my question to you. I want to know who your current, no judgment, hashtag safe zone, safe room, safe area, safe whatever.
Uh-huh.
Who is your current top five, which is not in this context. Hold on. I'm going to add some parameters that open up that make you feel hopefully very welcome and safe and free. Not your favorites of all time.
Mm-hmm.
Not your legacies. Although they can be alums.
Sure.
I just want to know who currently makes your heart go pitter patter. You could even throw like Guerdy in there. You know, like it could be.
Of course.
Literally, and not, I like that I said even, but like, and we'll get to Miami, but like it could be truly whomever you want. Somebody currently, someone that grabs your attention or you're doing a rewatch. Just who makes you feel good right now? Who's
sure,
your top
sure.
five?
Brendan, you should go first.
Okay, yeah. I think I'm a little better off the cuff because I'm not as particular as Dan, but I'm going to say first person who comes to mind is Gisele Bryant. I'm always rooting for her. I just think she's gorgeous. She's funny. She's messy, of course. And I mean, she gets a lot of flack for being messy. And you know what? She keeps still trudging along in this world of ours. She is great. Somebody who I'm loving right now and I think is having a moment in New Jersey is Jackie. I think this is like her
shine.
I think she's being very forthcoming with talking about her eating disorder 100%. In a way that I've never seen that represented on television. She's also willing to get into the mix, willing to go up against Dolores in a way. Dolores, mm-hmm. who has always been like one of my faves, but I'm leaving her off this list for right now just because. In Miami, I'm going to have to give it to Alexia because also a person just showing her entire life. I mean, who knew that one person could give us this many storylines this intense in just one season of being back? I want to mention, and I don't know if you are on the Melbourne train at all, but what Dan and I have been visiting Melbourne for the first time, and Gina Liano has the girls shaking from the moment she steps on the screen. They really can't. Yep. They really can't handle her. And then,
who could? Honestly, who could?
I know exactly. And then, I just want to give it up for Sheree Whitfield. She's not back on our screens yet, but she's always been a favorite and making history as a housewife returning for the third time. And I can't wait to see what she does.
I love that. Those are some iconic choices. I feel a contemporary movement. Mm-hmm. I feel some memories of the past that are also our future, like Sheree.
Yes.
For Sheree. And you know, and I don't mean this in a disrespectful way, it's not the last time she was fired. She's going to get some sort of demotion, and then she will return again mightier than ever. You cannot keep her down.
She is the modern day equivalent of a phoenix, constantly rising, uh-huh. rising.
Yeah.
From Portia saying goodbye, Ashley, is what you're saying. Yeah.
I think it's a good lifestyle to be able to like do it for a few years, take a break, come back. Like that's a good cadence to have instead of having to like do it every single year. And then if you get fired worrying about never coming back, she's like, oh, I'll probably be back in a few years.
Yeah, exactly.
Do you think that we'll get a full tour of whatever update resides at Chateau Sheree, like whatever we have cooking over there? Do you think that we're going to get, do you think it looks any different from when we last saw it?
I mean, I think the part that we need to see would be the basement, because that's what Kenya was exploring. And I'm sure she would not come back on our television screens with the basement in the same condition. I mean, I think like the focus is going to really be apparently a fashion show with some fashions. So like she's already kind of justified like the whole Chateau Sheree during the last return. This return is to justify her
She by Sheree,
exactly. Yeah.
And not only fashion show with fashions, fashion show with Apollo, apparently.
Oh my God, yeah.
Apollo and I wanna say Lisa Wu. And which other OG was there?
Phaedra was there.
Phaedra, no, but like OG, whose husband was one
Deshaun.
Yeah.
Deshaun was there, who will always carry a special place in my heart for spending a bajillion dollars on a charity event, assuming that this not ticketed event would raise $1 million. And then I think getting like a couple K, it was an iconic mistake that many, many people have made since. And I love her for it. She was very sweet. She was very generous.
Queen of events
that are just, you know, an event, a television event. Maybe not really a charitable one, but I felt like I had been given a gift.
Yeah.
So that's got to count for something. Dan, I need to know your choice. And again, no pressure. It could be just a moment.
Yeah.
It could be they made me smile at a whatever. I'm just curious for your current. It's so unfair that I love to ask it.
No, I mean, so much of what Brendan said, what are people who would show up on my list? So what I'm going to do is focus on stuff that's currently airing or I'm watching and not on Brendan's list.
Mm-hmm.
So we, as Brendan mentioned, we are like going, see, Melbourne's on Discovery Plus now. So us Americans have no excuse anymore. Yeah. So we recently recapped season one on our Patreon and like, I'm very excited. The word on the street is season two and three are like hot. So I'm excited for that.
They are. I stopped at three because then it became unavailable. It's phenomenal.
Yeah, yeah.
Phenomenal.
So Brendan said Gina Liano. I'll say Jackie, the psychic, because like I recognize the face.
Shine, shine,
shine. Yeah, shine, shine, shine.
Whatever she says, shine on.
Yes. I mean, pretty iconic to come on. Like, we've seen psychics on The Housewives, but to actually be a psychic as a main cast member is pretty iconic. So yeah, Jackie, you got to give it up to Lisa Barlow. She's got the girls running around in circles. So that's a lot of fun. And then I'm going to round out the top five with Goerdy, Dr. Nicole, and Julia as three newbies in Miami.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I just, like, it's hard to come on as a new person in an established franchise. And granted, like, it's a little different in Miami because we're kind of starting from scratch, but we're kind of, mm-hmm. like, keeping some of the old. But, like, I think they all had interesting stuff going on. They meshed well. Like, they got along with each other. It doesn't feel like we're just in a room of people, like, in Salt Lake City where no one really wants to be there. Like, they seem to all be having fun together. So, yeah.
I am shaken with the addition of Julia. I think that Julia, who I really enjoy, and I thank God every day that 2 seconds ago when I finished watching the finale, I saw that they moved into a fancy house because that was, to me, the missing piece.
Okay.
But I'm just fascinated by that. I'm fascinated
I mean, that. Her scenes with Adriana this entire season were electric. The scene of them sitting in the rain and talking about love together. Like, there's not been anything like that since The Notebook. You know?
I mean, Adriana's like, you taught me what love is. And I'm like, wait, what are we talking about here?
But also, quite literally, what are we talking about?
I don't know.
What is happening there?
It always feels like there's, like, some force off screen or, like, something left unsaid with them. And it's, like, so interesting and fun slash weird to watch all at the same time.
Because there is a tension that is the undercurrent of all of this that is constantly there in there. I mean, she had a proposal moment.
Yeah.
That was wild. It's a lot.
But it's very, it's like, it's, you would think it's just Adriana being kind of a loony, but like Julia with a proposal, like she brings plenty loony. Yeah.
I think Julia really enjoys it. She enjoys the expression of affection, I guess. Mm-hmm. I would say.
It seems like from Julia's entire history, it seems like Julia loves hard in all types of ways, whether it be from having several kids, having several former spouses, having Martina, having this farm where she's loving and taking care of all these animals. Like, it's, she just wants to love. Like, shine, love.
Yeah.
You know, Housewives was obviously started as this, like, way to see and kind of understand and complicate the idea of women of means living perfect lives.
Right.
And obviously the formula has changed as Housewives has changed over the last 16 or however many years. How do you think someone like Julia fits into that? Is she an outlier because her interests are so different from what you would consider the Housewives mold? Or does she fit into the world in the sense that standing out is the way to kind of move ahead in this world, in this cast, in this future for H-dubs?
Well, you mentioned when you're talking about her initially, you mentioned, like, you were glad that you saw that they got this fancy house. But to me, her and Martina represent wealth that there's some people have where it's like they're totally content living their eccentric life on their farm. And that is the kind of wealthy that they are. And they, like, can have the means to take care of all those animals and, like, do that type of thing. So it is a little against the mold. And I don't even think that Julia thinks about that. I think Martina's more in the relationship, the more wants, like, the fancier house, the fancier cars type of thing. But Julia, I think, is just, like, walking through life.
Yeah, I mean, she doesn't strike me as the type of person that's like, oh, I want to be a housewife. Like, I think Adriana might have just been like, come on, like, let's do this, girl. I'm just like, okay, I love you, sure.
She's such a fascinating casting choice to me. Because she is so different, and it's like, do I she's obviously, to me, a great person. She's really interesting, but there's a moment where I'm like, wait, do I like the direction it's going? I think I do.
I mean,
I think I do, but I can't express it. Which is great for a podcast.
I think she spread her housewives' wings in the finale where she confronted Larsa of being like, I've connected with all these women and like you kind of ignore me. Like I don't even exist. So I thought that was interesting. And like I was proud of her for like doing that, you know?
And what did you think of Larsa's response, which is like, listen, it goes both ways. And also, I have tension with your BFF production partner or something. I don't know how, you know, the closeness is endlessly fascinating. But of course, I'm not going to be necessarily as close to you because of that. What did you think of Larsa?
It seemed like I think it was also brought up that Julia doesn't have an Instagram presence. And I could see that as being the primary reason Larsa doesn't care about Julia. So I don't know. Like Larsa, I was down on Larsa being on the show, but like by the end, I was like, you know, you're one of the housewives that I don't need to like, but I can enjoy what you're bringing to the table, you know?
Yeah. For me, Larsa is almost like I'm enjoying her in group scenes, but I'm not like wanting to go home with Larsa as much, you know?
Yeah.
I'm going to say something that I never thought I would say. When they announced Miami was returning, obviously through a parade, you guys were there. We cheered. Things happened.
Streamers.
Baby Ben was the grand marshal. The whole thing. It was a whole mishigas. And then I heard some of the casting choices and I was like, okay, no Leah Black. Not sure how I feel about that, but proceed because I'm so excited. Oh, wait. Larsa is returning. And then I thought, we're A, either fucked, or B, she's going to be as annoying and as much of a drag as I personally felt she was during her first time on Housewives. And I have to tell you, she has been to me one of the biggest, most shocking surprises of any return house or person I thought was going to be a certain way. And came to me to be someone totally different. I have been charmed by her. I find her so enjoyable.
Okay.
I think I actually, this is very like the, what is it, ASMR of the cadence of her voice. No joke, I find soothing. The ways that the word comes out a half second after the beginning consonant or vowel or whatever. There's like a flow to it and it's a slower stream that happens. I don't know. I am invested in her. I can't explain it. And I love when she's a little bit selfish because I'm like, that is you. Like, I think she's holding back a little bit on being a dick because she remembers and she's also learned a little bit. But I gotta tell you, there's something about Larsa. There's something about her. I can't believe it. I actually can't believe I'm saying this.
Okay, so I'm not maybe in the parade with you on the Larsa float. But
okay, but you cross the street. You cross the street on the way to the train.
I'm with you in the fact that I felt that she was going to be a certain way, and I am pleasantly surprised that she's different. I'm not hanging on her every word. I'm not buying the audiobook to fall asleep to in the way that you are, but
I'm
halfway there. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I think like she's still a little bit of the snooze that I thought she was during season one, but I think the difference between season one and now is that now, like in season one was not really a Housewives show. Now she's placed in a Housewives show. So she's still Larsa and like a little self-producing and careful and like has an agenda of what she wants like to be the narrative about her divorce and her family and this or that. So, but I'm not exactly charmed by her. Like I don't want to be her friend. I don't want to hang out. Like I don't, I don't know.
Dan, where do you find yourself in the Adriana versus Larsa of it all? What was your reaction to that? How did you kind of process it?
So I don't think Adriana's right, but I do like Agents of Chaos. Like,
Well, I mean, she's the top one. She's the manager.
So, so it's like, I like a Candace. I like a Adriana. I like a person that like is just kind of there mixing it all up, and I might not agree with them, but like we're bringing life to the scene. So I don't, Adriana, like she did a lot with being a friend of, and I'm happy for her. I mean, the friends on Miami, like I love how it operates here. Whereas like in some other cities, it's like we barely even touch down with the friends right. at all. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
The friends are actually friends with these people. Like they're ingrained in it and they're not just appearing every once in a while, like in other cities. Like where's mm-hmm. Angie? Where yeah. is Angie?
Mm. Well, we touched on Angie during the yeah. reunion. Yeah.
Yeah. Angie's one of those wild cases of someone who technically is involved in this season, but you don't want to be the screenshot of the text because I would think that that kind of contribution, while some of the castmates are acting as your surrogate, mm-hmm. I don't know what kind of value that brings you aside from name recognition, which can bring a lot of value, especially if they know that they have to recast.
Yeah. But,
with Miami, I just think Marisol is such a priceless contribution. And frankly, to me, is the perfect friend and is so great at exactly the spot that she's in. Mm. I would hate to see her get promoted because I think this is actually exactly right. Do you want Marisol to find herself a whatever palm tree or whatever the fuck they're holding?
A mojito.
A dream. Okay, great.
So here's the thing with Marisol, and I think I agree with you for now, because Marisol was very great at the beginning of the season, was so funny, like comic relief. Once she started going after Dr. Nicole so hard, it got so cringy with Marisol for a sec. But mm-hmm. then she, like, by the finale, mm-hmm. she turned the ship around and she had me loving her again. By, like, yeah. making up with Dr. Nicole and, like, all that. She knows what she needs to do. She just, like, sometimes is, like, not quite on top of it. Like, hence her Watch What Happens Live appearance. There was, like, mm-hmm. that really great moment where she gave Andy the oh my god,
a rosary.
I was yeah, I was raised Catholic, so me yeah,
with a Star of David on it.
I oh yes, 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 yes,
yeah,
yeah. But the rest of the episode, she wasn't quite like yeah. playing along. So like sometimes she really gets it, sometimes she like totally misses.
Yeah, she's one of the housewives that are not good at Watch What Happens Live.
Yeah.
And why do you think that is? Do you think that she's so used to, she's a certain kind of housewife in the sense that like she's great at a controlled environment and it's a little too.
You got to answer the questions no matter what. And yeah. she was not answering a question.
Yeah.
Sort of on that note, but not really. I think there's been a lot of conversation about the power of Alexia as a housewife because of the storyline that is just a naturally driven one. There's always something happening in her life, and she has mm-hmm. been so unbelievably vulnerable and consistent in that vulnerability. But when was the last time that, you know, like the cue card at the end of an episode featured a do-over of her wedding after her mom died on her original date?
I know.
Goes to, but here's the happy ending. And then there's the fucking capper to that, which is like, not really, because her son just got arrested for domestic violence. Like, how are we even to process the combination of bad luck and just ever ongoing new waves of sadness and drama? I mean, what is there to say about this?
This is the 10th, like the 10th thing we're on with her this season. Yeah. And it's all yeah. stuff that's happened to her in her life. And like, she's showing it, which is a great quality. It's almost a Judician quality as far as like being willing to show your life. And it's funny saying that now as Teresa's now doing a little bit of pulling.
You're not allowed to see any of it. You're not allowed to see any of
right.
it.
Yeah. yeah. She's like for the first time doing like a little bit of pulling back and not selling her life on magazine covers, yada, yada, yada.
Yeah.
So it's interesting to see this from someone, especially in 2022, when you expect a lot of these women coming back on to be like tight and try to hold the narrative. Another opposite of this is like Meredith, which I'm sure we'll get to at some point.
Yeah.
So much was going on in her life this entire season. We didn't know about any of it. So
yeah.
the fights that she was having felt so baseless and stupid, yet she was dealing with all this stuff off camera that she wasn't showing the audience. But Alexia is not doing that. Alexia is showing everything. So yeah. It's like, it's refreshing. It's sad. It's angering. It's like all of the emotions, because like so many different types of things are happening to her.
Yeah.
I can't imagine what it must be to react to news as Alexia. Like, when do you get a chance to feel like this is going to be okay? Like, the Peter news, which is just terrible all mm-hmm. around, and unfortunately, because of her role on TV, is something that she has to unfortunately respond to on national TV, which I'm sure we'll see on the reunion. But it's just got to be a stressor. I mean, to think about how you're reacting to things or addressing things that have happened several weeks ago, and there's always something. It's just, she's just terribly unlucky. I hate to say it, but what other way could you describe someone's life like this, you know?
Yeah. I mean, I do think that there is the update. She was on Watch Happens Live and like was like, oh, I can't really talk about it because obviously it was an mm-hmm. ongoing case. But I think the case has only recently, her. Yeah, been the charges were dropped. So
yeah.
Yeah. So at least that's, I don't know what the status is either with Miami. Like, I would imagine they should be getting cameras up and like get the mm-hmm. ball rolling again. But I don't know if anyone has heard anything yet.
I haven't, but I would assume that because there's been just such a rabidly positive response, I think it's been raves across the board.
Yeah.
Similar, I would say, to certainly Girls Trip, but also Salt Lake City's, you know, season one premiere, like, and actually even season two, mm-hmm. you know, I think that there absolutely must be another, but it comes to a question of timing, I would say. Like, when how soon can we get this done, and who's going to be a part of it?
Yeah.
Do you anticipate any major cast changes? Is there anything that either of you would like to see in a dream scenario where you're like, oof?
More Kiki.
More Kiki. Like, more make Kiki. Her an actual friend of.
Yeah.
It's so interesting that in a conversation about how natural friends of fit on Miami, the Marisol of it all, mm-hmm. Adriana, for in the understanding her history with the women, regardless of how she performs. But Kiki, I feel like we never really got a chance to know, and yet she's in so many of these major scenes yeah. and moments. It's unfortunate, mm-hmm. I would say.
Yeah,
I think it's like probably tough for production to figure out like the logistics. Okay, we're taking a chance making two of the main characters from the original season friends of, and mm-hmm. casting three new actual housewives. So like them having to tinker with that, I'm sure the addition of Kiki was like, where do we place her? Like, how much do we focus on her? Mm-hmm. And it seems like, I mean, it seems like the fans are kind of like, okay, this person is always around, always in conversation. She's showing up to like smaller group scenes to help with things. Like, let's hear from her more.
Yeah. And has a sense of humor too. Like she, when yeah. we do hear from her, like she's pretty funny. So,
yeah, I can't believe that Miami. I'm so excited for the reunion. I'm just very sad that the finale was so impactful. Mm. I mean, I cried. I had a friend over who had never seen this season, but had seen mm-hmm. previous ones, and was absolutely sobbing, understandably yeah. so, during the reveal that Alexia's mother had so terribly and sadly passed away. I mean, it just. This season hit on every level, and I thought the finale really delivered,
yeah. which
I was really thankful for, honestly.
I know you don't watch the episodes live. Did you feel as though there was any impact on Miami, like airing on Peacock at midnight, in terms of the response to the show? Because I tend to watch it live or live-ish like that night, and it feels like no one ever really knows when to talk online about Miami. Like the Miami Housewives are on Watch Happens Live a different night, not the day it's airing. And like, it feels like they're missing out by not being on Bravo, I think, in a way.
I mean, it would make sense for them to be on Watch What Happens like every Thursday. Yeah. You know? Isn't that when? I mean, I literally only watched, we're recording this Monday night. I literally only watched the finale just now.
Okay.
Ended
right before we started recording. Yeah. And it is one of those things where when you don't watch live episodes, you still, and by you I mean I, mm-hmm. still go on Instagram, that you're like taking the chance that there's stuff that's going to be spoiled. So I try to stay away from certain things, or I'll like go straight to messages or whatever, but trying, but I know that I'm taking the, in spoiler culture, you just shouldn't be on social media if you don't want to see anything. It's no fault but your own. But I have come to sort of realize that with some of these seasons, some of these special moments in time, maybe I should change my mind a little bit and start watching live episodes. Although in the case of Miami, as you said, it is slightly awkward because Instagram culture within the Bravo community is so communal that people are used to seeing memes go up and GIFs, which is how I call it, potato, potato, GIF, GIF. But like, you're used to seeing certain things timed against the airing of the episode. And I don't know that, I think that people have probably started to kind of get used to the Thursday afternoon of it all, or like Thursday morning. That's just kind of the water cooler. It's no, it's a, it is a daytime water cooler talk. It's not the PM, but I think it's also the future of what's going to happen. There are going to be shows and pieces of content that we may consider artistically prestige that will be on Peacock. They want Peacock to succeed. They need more Miami franchises, and we're just going to have to adjust.
The thing is, like, you can have it both ways in my mind. I mean, like, for example, like, Euphoria is HBO Max and a huge streaming thing, and people watch it live. And like, I mean, Dan and I, you know, we know you don't use Twitter, but Dan and I use Twitter. And then like, I also like texting with my friends who are watching live during episodes like that as well, if I don't want to like be looking at Twitter. So I think there is a model where they could move it to an evening and have it run at like 9 p.m. Eastern time, much like HBO Max has a lot of success doing with all of its shows.
I would love that. And as someone who just got rid of her a cable TV, so that's right, I am paying for Housewives now individually per episode, which is quite a thrill. But, you know, Euphoria, the internet, our personalities, our souls, our spirits blew up yesterday because we all crashed essentially HBO Max.
Right.
And my episode of Euphoria didn't start. People started, I think, being able to access it 20 or so minutes in. I couldn't access mine until like 9:45 or whatever. But I was there at the moment. As someone who does not participate in live TV culture, I was at the on the couch, looking at the TV, pressing the HBO Max app or whatever the fuck, waiting for the absolute second that I could get it, which I do think supports the idea that we would love to see it. Maybe that is the direction that Peacock needs to go in, to like just kind of organize it a little bit so everything feels a little bit more specific. I think that you're both raising really good points here.
Yeah.
And it could help, it could only help Miami at the end of the day. And it makes them feel like they're a part of the conversation, especially for, you know, Tozy's Pippin, who knows herself some social media. And I'm sure they all want to be able to participate in it and not feel kind of left out.
Yeah.
Speaking of left out, I don't want to leave out what I think is a major part of the conversation.
Of course.
Teresa and Louis, which I do want to get to, but I don't know if we'll have time. But really, part one of the Salt Lake City reunion, which just aired. On the heels of its trailer,
which
is, to me, a different vibe, but I'd love to know your thoughts.
Yes.
What do you guys think about, what did you think about part one as a whole? Did it deliver for you in the ways that you were potentially expecting or possibly not?
I love the set. The set is like my favorite set of all time.
No, I do. That was very Aretha Franklin talking about Taylor Swift right there. Oh, no, beautiful gowns. No, okay.
The fishing hole is just, I just love it, it's like kind of reminding me of the Atlanta when they had the Japan inspired set.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It was just a nightmare. Yeah, loved it. Loved it.
No, I mean, and then everyone was talking about the fashions forever. I think it's fun. It works. It's a pop. I like the Jen Shah thing is a little distracting, even with the gloves off, the feathers in the face. I wish that wasn't in every shot. But content wise, I mean, the thing is, I enjoyed this season of Salt Lake City. I think there were interesting parts, but to compare it to Miami, where like you can watch Miami and understand what is going on. Like, mm-hmm. I think it's hard to understand what is going on in Salt Lake City a lot of the time, especially with the revelation in this episode where there was a lot going on in Meredith's life that we did not know about. So we don't know what she's thinking or feeling or responding to. There's so much going on with Jen Shah and Mary individually, like church stuff, arrest stuff, but we don't really get too deep into any of it.
And I think like the lesson that I learned from this episode of this reunion, it's like everyone's a little wrong across the board. There were moments where it was like, there were moments where you got a clip of someone saying something stupid, like throughout the entire episode. And it was like, okay, everyone's a little wrong in this episode, in the season where, not to move to Jersey yet, but like we're in Jersey, the fights that are happening, like everyone's kind of like a little right in ways. But like, I'm not rooting for Salt Lake City, the girlies there, because I'm like, everything's bad. And like, you all have said something really shitty on this TV show this season.
Yeah, it's strange how it feels like Jen Shah seems to be the most normal person on the couches right now.
Yeah, it's this season was all about like, we're keeping it in our minds, the awful things that Jen Shah has done. But it's like, there's something watchable about her because she seems nice in the context of like everything, all the petty shit going on with this group of women, and petty and serious shit, but like just like the way the season has been set up, it's like we're forgetting about Jen Shah's awful acts and she's coming across good in some contexts and some ways weirdly. That seems weird to say, but it's like I know it's compared to the Erica stuff a lot, but the way that Erica kind of acted that entire Beverly Hills season, it's like Jen Shaw's like being nice.
Yeah.
It feels totally different. Like, yeah. And the crazy thing is like Jen is the one who's been charged.
Exactly.
As like, you know, the top person in this massive scheme. And yet Jen, to me, oddly enough, comes across and is received almost as the person with the least amount of baggage on those couches. Like, she seems lighter now than she was last season. Maybe, you know, it's just part one. Obviously, we're going to get into the court stuff more as the reunion goes on. But it is somewhat wild that this woman who Andy himself was like, you're facing decades in federal prison, seems pretty okay in the sense of how she's processing it or not.
Yeah.
Which is so Looney Tunes to think, but I feel like that's how I reacted to this.
Yeah, I mean, like that's what Dan was getting to in his tagline at the top of the episode. It's like it's like we're all worried about like have eyes on the fact that you're going to jail potentially for decades, yet it's all going in one ear with you and out the other ear, maybe hitting some feathers on the way, but like it's not great.
Yeah.
With John, it's, you know, the gloves are off, literally and otherwise, and yet no one's really taking any turn at her. The way that they are is by saying, listen, you body shame me or fat shame me, but somehow that's better than what I'm telling you that Lisa Barlow has done. But, you know, they're not saying like, and you're a criminal. Nobody's doing anything that would be 20% of what would be said on Jersey, maybe on New York from a couple seasons ago, on Orange County if Tamara was there, on Atlanta. 5 seconds with Giselle in an elevator. Like, it's just, it is somewhat fascinating that there is an elephant in the room when we talk about the idea of this big moment of news, and yet nobody wants to address it. The only conduit to it is talking about Meredith's dead dad.
Right.
Like, make that make sense to me.
Yeah.
I could not believe this entire, like, the entire Meredith thing, like, why were they so hyper-focused on, like, the exact date? Because I don't know, like, I mean, I'm sure we've all lost people in our lives. When you go to, like, go bury them, that's, like, a couple days process. You're not really clear when your friends go away for that, like, exactly when they're doing what part of that. So, like, why was everyone so obsessed with that? it made no sense. But then she also was in a place where she couldn't really like sit and clear that up for them. Not that she has to, but she was dealing with all this other bullshit in her life that we're learning about on this episode as well, which was wild. I had no idea about the stuff with her sister, her nephew, like any of that stuff. Mm-hmm. It's just like nobody's communicating properly. So we're all, we're all in a tornado, bad weather.
Bad weather, yeah.
And how much of it did Lisa know when it came to, because did Meredith at one point say that Lisa was like aware of some of this? Didn't she? I thought she did, but I could be 100% wrong.
Yeah, I might have missed that.
I could be pulling this out of my ass. She could have been talking about something else.
And Lisa's like one of my favorites to watch, but also she's not a reliable narrator anyway. So like, you don't know what she knows, what she doesn't know at all times.
Oh, speaking of Lisa, I was obsessed with Heather Gay saying, like, every time we shoot a scene, you tell us what we're supposed to talk about, what we can't talk about. Like, Lisa producer Marlowe cracks me up. Like, I find that really fascinating. That's why, like, she's on my list of the interesting people, because, like, she, even though she's, like, a nut, like, she is very interesting to watch.
I 1000% agree and would have her on mine. And I don't know what is happening in Salt Lake City. And I think some of it is the downward spiral of bad weather and seeing the glee and we're seeing them flex their muscles while they're accusing other people of doing a light stretch.
Right.
And it's just, it is fascinating because I feel like it's so entirely disingenuous and I'm also very appreciative for it. Mm. But I mean, the Phoenix has risen in Salt Lake City. And I do think I know that I am a bar hoe. Like I know that I am. I respect her. I am fascinated by her. I think she has the right to be perplexed about this. And I do think that like the stuff with Jack and the invite list, it's like we're all talking around this thing that if Mary had been there, I think we would have been discussing, which is you invited people who you thought would be pissed about Mary's church because they had attended. Let's not pretend this is like mommy has friends, you know, like it's there was an intention here, but the way you're selling it, fine, you're being dragged in so many other places. Like, let's just do. I think she's fascinating. She has this frenetic energy that is kind of taking over in a little bit, and she has the right to reveal it because she is getting hit on all sides, and it is super fucking ridiculous that these women are like, but back to Lisa being a bad person. Jen, I'm so glad we're friends.
Well,
like, what is happening?
Well, the thing is, like, they said it in the reunion. They said there are someone who stirs the pot on either side of either couch, and one of them, obviously, was Lisa Barlow, and Whitney said she's taking the baton, but I think like Whitney doesn't stir the pot. She kind of like just like holds the pot, walks around, and drunkenly accidentally spills it around all the time. It's like we were just in Scranton this weekend, like that famous scene from The Office where Kevin from The Office spills the pot of chili.
That's her with the pot, yeah, for sure. I mean, I'm nervous about this next season because I mean, obviously Jenny is no longer filming and that's a good thing, but what is Lisa Barlow doing next season if everybody hates her?
I mean, they were in Arizona, like smiling.
Yeah, everyone was smiling. Like, what was going on there?
It feels like at a certain point, these women don't actually know how they're supposed to behave, which is, I mean that like kind of literally. I don't think they know what direction to go in because it is also only their third season. Mm-hmm. And the Jen stuff has completely, to me, changed the direction of how they were going to respond to things because they think it's untouchable at a certain point. And they're not entirely wrong when it comes to like, she's still on the show. We sort of need to figure out a way to make this work.
Yeah.
So we're just going to isolate others instead. I don't know. It does feel like it could go bad real quick.
Heather's going to have some regrets, I think.
I don't think she does.
I know, but also like Heather needs like a wake-up call, a reunion coach. Like she has the potential to be the most likable person on this cast. And she is in a lot of ways. Like when we're watching her on the screen. Like, she comes across as very likable, very relatable. All of the stuff, her explaining Mormonism to the world via Salt Lake City this entire season was so interesting. She sits in those reunions and she always makes bad choices. It happened the first season. She bounced back from it a little bit. But then when we, now we're in this reunion, it's like, what are we, what are you doing? Girl, what do you think you're doing?
How do you think she is processing this? Why do you think she's making the choices that she's making? What do you think is happening in her head?
I think that her and Whitney have gotten this little alliance together and have like yes and to each other into this like weird little fantasy world of theirs. And they want to take down Lisa Barlow for some reason when they should realize that they need to pivot and they would be stronger together.
Yeah, and yet it doesn't feel like yes and to me. It feels more like this is scripted and this is the, or this is not scripted in the sense that like literally scripted, but this is, this was a, an idea that we had, or we both fucking hate Lisa and we want that to be the thing, or we see an end to, you know, this Meredith narrative that we're just going to kind of twist and turn. It doesn't necessarily feel like they're like making beautiful jazz together going on a riff.
I meant they're like, they before this were insular and only like they're yes-menning each other. They're yes
100%.
And like there's no critical eye in like the narrative that they're trying to spin on this reunion.
Do you think that that Heather is getting a certain kind of edit? Do you think that the people are being less precious with her than they maybe were before? Or is it just that she's giving them stuff that's quicker to critique, shall we say?
I felt like last year's reunion, she came across pretty poorly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I think they're just, she's doing this to herself.
Yeah, for sure.
I just don't understand what's, I think that there's a certain amount of like a little bit of a high when you feel like you have the audience in your pocket. And I think she's had that so much, but the cast universally got criticized for not holding Jen accountable. So it's a weird thing because there's like the bubble of being an audience favorite and then the bubble of being in production on set and feeling like you have support of whomever on the couch. And then there's the bubble of people accusing you of being in a bubble.
Yeah.
And I just, I don't know which one Heather is responding to, but she's incredibly perceptive.
I feel like the Jen stuff is really difficult for them to tackle as a cast together. Cause like, what, like at the end of the day, what is there to say? Like, well, a normal person might be like, oh, maybe I want to distance myself from you a little bit while this is all going on. Like I can support you from afar maybe, but like we need to all film together and she's still filming, so that's not really going to be an option. So and then Jen's not going to like go into specifics and defend herself against each charge line by line, so we kind of just have to wait it out and see like what happens like in court. It's so it's strange because it felt like the Teresa stuff all happened like so quickly. And like with stuff going on with with Erica and Jen, feels like we're gonna get two. Well, we'll see what happens with Jen. Like a lot of times, court dates will get delayed and postponed and adjourned. So like, stuff getting dragged out for 2 years feels like a lot. Whereas like Teresa was like, oh wow, like we're already sentenced and Joe's going to jail and Teresa's going to jail. But maybe that's just like the, since that's all in the past, it feels like a happy for her.
And to your point on like how do you approach this as a cast member? I think we saw Meredith try to like push Jen away and be like, this is better if I like, if we are separate. And then now she's like coming back in because she knows that she has to work with Jen in order to like continue to be on this show. Like her like making up with Jen at this reunion was kind of unexpected to me, but it's like, where else would she go? She can't disengage further.
I mean, the problem is like the cast is not large to begin with and shrinking as the weeks go by. So they need like Housewives and Friends. Like, let's do the Miami formula. Mm-hmm. Get a ton of people in the room. And then like, if some people want nothing to do with Jen, that is then okay. Cause then we have so many filming partners.
Yeah. And you know, a lot of changes going on. They had that card at the beginning of the episode saying a lot of stuff, and some of it one could call words. let me grab it. The Real Housewives of Salt Lake City reunion was taped prior to Jenny Wen's social posts becoming public. Sidebar, they were public on Facebook, which is how people were able to grab them. But who knows what that means. Continuing on, and her subsequent departure from the series, those posts are not addressed in the show. Do you think that the first episode was edited in any way, noting or re-edited rather, noting this, you know, revelation or reveal?
The most obvious part is them leaving in the part where Jenny herself says anybody can be racist.
Yeah, it was like truly, that felt like, how was this not scripted? The fact that we had that title card and then that moment in that same episode, wow, crazy. I mean, the part that's a little frustrating is, I mean, you mentioned like this was all public. When we go into a reunion, it's like, this is the time where we can get up to date and like, it feels like we're never up to date with Salt Lake City because then something else will come out and then we're still kind of living in the past.
There were a couple cringe moments specifically because of the Jenny of it all. And I thought the absolute most cringeworthy moment of the entire first part of the season, understanding that we have a woman on stage who has allegedly defrauded millions of dollars from vulnerable people, was Heather saying a lot about Mary's racism, which I just felt they focused on it a lot and should, you know, in the sense of like, this is important to discuss, but it's so tone deaf to me in light of what we understand about Jenny, in light of her very obvious anti-Black racism. And we're not getting that side of it. We're not understanding. We now know more about Jenny than Jenny knows about Jenny even now. And it's just incredibly cringe to see Heather, someone who's been accused of borrowing aspects of a culture she's not a part of, to be almost heavy-handed in making a statement about Mary in light of what we understand about Jenny, in light of a conversation about racism. I just thought it was... I like gasped, I which is very abnormal for me. I thought it was real awk, but is there another way around it? Like, what do you do when you want to have this important conversation and the participant isn't present? Or the person involved in the conversation, really, that it's directed toward isn't there? Like, how much freedom did that give Heather to feel like she could really double down?
Well, you can't, I mean... That's going to be tough in this go round. And then also like early next season when we know like Jenny is going to be filming with them early on. And then like what conversations are they going to be having? So it is like difficult with not all parties there. I don't think that Heather should take it upon herself to speak for like anyone in this context. I think that's weird. Also like Heather like showed her weird anti-Asian racism in this segment as well, like when they showed the segment about her like comparing Jenny to an anime character, and then she like when Heather was confronted with that in the reunion, I don't think she did a good job. Like, she apologized, but I don't think she did a good job in the way she apologized, because she said a bunch of other weird shit that can be like misconstrued as well. So yeah, I mean, I think that like I said at the beginning of us talking about Salt Lake City, like this cast in this reunion has proved that like everyone is in the wrong.
I mean, what you said, essentially, it's hard to I don't know how you can't really win production wise like, you can't not have the conversation, but then you're having the conversation without everybody present, so like, what, neither is the ideal situation, really.
Yeah, and the thesis that you're making is that this person said ignorant things that were racist, but the intention there was different than Jenny's. Like, we're all talking about how the impact is really important. And, you know, these women are assuming or presuming they understood Mary's intention, which I would argue is not necessarily, in some of these instances, exactly right. I don't think that they understood her intention, because they can't actually speak for that. They don't know her, but they all seem to have a pretty good idea. And at the end of the day, everything that Jenny said about Mary is more than appropriate for Jenny plus some. So it's like we're having this conversation that we know going in is going to be odd because of the revelations mm-hmm. about Jenny. And I think it just makes everything so cringe because there should be a conversation to be had. Bravo's actually taking the time to talk about this.
Yeah.
Even though they're doing it with they're doing it in a way that is somewhat questionable in light of the fact that they always do seem to make time to talk about a person's behavior in a heavy criticism, regardless of whether or not it's merited, when that person is a Black housewife.
Right.
And yet they're making the time to do this, as they should, even though it's incredibly not consistent and does mm-hmm. appear to be happening on a consistent basis along racial lines. Mm-hmm. But it is something that's happening. But the main participant, the person who arguably is like the victim of this, is the person who by far seemed to take Lee in posting these incredibly violent, racist things. So it's like, how am I supposed to process this? Regardless, from the intro card, like, how do I find value in this conversation? I know I should, but like, how do I do it when Jenny is the one who's teaching me?
Well, I mean, that's the thing about human beings is like,
yeah,
there's no perfect moral person you can hold up as your teacher in any of this because that's not how human beings work. Mm-hmm. And I don't like Bravo's trying to figure this out in their own way. So
right.
yeah. they're showing yeah. us a conversation that happened. I mm-hmm. am happy we're seeing the conversation with the context totally. Of when this happened and what's gone on since and all of that. But I don't think that we're supposed to, we can take lessons from this conversation, obviously.
Yeah.
But given the people on stage, I don't know if we're going to learn a ton of positive from that, you know?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I also think there's like the idea of like, nobody's perfect. And also the idea of like, I don't ever want Jenny to be my teacher from right. here on out. It's unfortunate because there are valuable lessons we could learn about this, especially because as we saw with what Crystal discussed on the Beverly Hills reunion, mm-hmm. there is mm-hmm. very specific anti-Asian racism that exists in large number within the Bravo community, obviously,
right,
and also
course.
The greater world.
Sure.
But it is something that nobody wants to discuss, and it's disturbing and terrible. It's just a wild thing to watch Jenny talk about how disturbing racism is, knowing that she will then go on an Instagram live
mm-hmm.
and say that she is the victim of her own racist act. Mm-hmm. It's like, it's too much. And I'm not saying this as a way of like, and they shouldn't have done it. Of course they should yeah. have. There was no way, you know, if you didn't know that these things were there, how are you going to know? I don't know.
Right,
it's
but just, this
it's,
is
it's an uncomfortable moment. It's an uncomfortable moment, but
yeah,
you know, discomfort
but
is
like
what it is.
This is tale as old as time. People center themselves in the narrative that they want to tell, and that was Jenny. What the narrative mm-hmm. she wanted to tell. Obviously, we all view it as problematic and fucked up, and mm-hmm. but it is what it is. I think it's like this reunion is going to be a mess given everything that has happened off screen and how much time. Since they filmed the reunion, doesn't it feel like they filmed it a decade ago?
Yeah.
Like, those looks came out so long ago. So long ago.
The only good thing I would say about the fact that they filmed the reunion so early is that the women had to binge the last couple eps.
Yeah.
Which adds this flavor to Lisa Barlow feeling like she's under attack, but like some of this stuff these women hadn't seen confessionals, mm-hmm. hadn't entirely understood what had happened at point X, Y, and Z. And it's like, well, you know, there are other major areas in which I wish that they had waited a week or two in which to do this. But in other ways, it is somewhat fascinating that a lot of this stuff came to a head the night before just in even getting this
yeah.
content. Like for someone I would think like Heather, for people like Bad Weather, who I think would kind mm-hmm. of not Jill Zarin strategize, but would want to have an idea of what they're doing, that does kind of even the playing field in terms of you can't really entirely figure out exactly what you're going to say if you haven't seen this stuff until the night before.
Yeah.
That does add a little of level of energy, but is it worth the cost of that?
Well,
you know,
it's, you also like never know how a lot of the explosive stuff is going to be reacted to by the audience. And I don't think you can really base everything that you do on the audience, but I feel if this Lisa Barlow sound clip had come out a little earlier in the season and she saw the audience reaction to it, because the audience was like, instantly iconic, she might have been like, maybe I'll lean into it a little more, maybe I'll be a little more comfortable going on stage knowing that like the audience likes this. But she's always trying to play like all sides, which is like also which makes her like fun, frenetic energy. So it is what it is. We can't undo the way that Bravo decided to roll this out or like film these reunions, but I like watching.
I mean, when we learned, like, as the reunion was being filmed that Mary was not there, I think everyone, a lot of people had the fear, like, oh, how are we even going to have a conversation? And I think the fact that they watched the episodes the day before
really helped
save the day.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
Do you think that they, do you think that they didn't know that Mary was going to be there? When do you think that they found out that Mary wasn't going to be there? Do you think it was on the couch? Do you think it was that day? Do you think it was the night before?
It sounds like Andy said that he had spoken to her days earlier.
Yeah.
But I think like...
Well, sorry, by they, I mean the cast. Oh. Sorry. I think production had a pretty good idea that she wasn't going to attend. Yeah.
I think Meredith knew probably.
Yeah.
I don't know about the others, but yeah.
Oh, man. And how do you think the reunion would have been different had she been there? Do you think that she would have had a moment of... How do you think that she would have contributed to the reunion cycle itself?
I mean, I think people last year were surprised that Mary had stuff to contribute to the reunion. Mm-hmm. There is entertainment value in Mary, but I've been of the mindset of, like, I don't really want her on the show moving forward. So, like, if this is how we're losing her... In my book, it's kind of like, so be it. Like, I would like to wrap it up, but like, it's just, you can't have an argument or a conversation with her. So like the way she reacts doesn't always make sense.
Mm-hmm.
So like, I like to understand what someone's thinking, what someone's point of view is. And I can't with Mary. So obviously there would have been value in resolving what had transpired, but I'm interested in what a Salt Lake City moving forward without her looks like people in a room who can reason with each other potentially.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, the Meredith line of like, I don't think this was healthy for Mary, I thought was particularly astute. Mm-hmm. I think someone needed to say it and say it on the couches and say it in a way where, you know, it wasn't meant to be an insult. It was just honestly the truth.
Yeah.
You know, it just wasn't healthy for her. I do have a question for you that's kind of like essentially unrelated. Lisa Barlow obviously has a lot of frustration about her monologue being shared, and that frustration is directed in many ways at production. But her argument is essentially, if you take out the monologue, if you take out what I said about Meredith, I'm a good friend. Do you think that that's the case? Do you think that this was an isolated incident and that otherwise Lisa should be judged on the, you know, majority of her character as we have seen? How do you respond to that?
I don't think so. As somebody who has, like, if we're talking real friendship, take out the show and coworkers being a part of this, like,
yeah, their friend circle.
Like,
yep.
If I found out that like any of my friends said this with the tone that she did, I don't care them saying that I slept with half of New York. Like, Dan knew me in my early 20s, whatever. But like, if with the tone and the vitriol, I think would be the thing. Like, if I found out that he did that, I'd be like, Dan, what? Like, we bicker and we like disagree, but we usually say it to each other's faces.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, they seemed for most of the season to not be in each other's good graces, but there would have been the potential for bouncing back. I mean, they're smiling in Arizona. Maybe they are bouncing back somehow. I don't know.
What would be the bigger shock to you, Lisa and Meredith being able to repair, or Meredith and Jen being able to repair?
I mean, Meredith and Jen like seem to be on the road right now. So,
yeah.
I mean, and I think it's easier to repair something when you're not that close to begin with, because like you're still in the process of building your relationship versus if they were super close and then you like rip it apart, that seems harder to repair.
Yeah. And I like think Meredith is kind of, is pretty calculated in like how she thinks things will be received. So I think she went so hard against Jen because she thought that's what the audience would want. And then seeing how like weirdly the audience doesn't hate Jen as much as like people thought she would, I think she's so willing strange. To, I think she's willing to warm up to her a little bit.
I don't know. I was honestly shocked at how much I enjoyed the reunion. I had kind of low expectations for it because I didn't die for the trailer and the Mary of it all plus Jenny. Like I just kind of was like, oh, I don't know how this is gonna go. I actually thought it was a really strong part one, I have to say.
And I'm gonna say something. The outfits work in the context of the set.
Why is that? Why is it because they had to go to Frozen for them to work? Because on Instagram initially, a fucking mess.
I don't know. Maybe I'm like so used to these outfits because they've been in my life for a decade now or something. But like they work. I'm like, I look at Meredith, I'm like, chic? Like, am I loving this?
Are you? Wait a minute.
I'm no fashionista. No. I'm no fashionista, but I like what I see and I see what I like.
I'm loving her little like bun, little hair with the coming wispies. Down. I'm like, and the thing is, you know, love it or hate it, you're gonna remember each and every one of these looks like 5 years from now. Whereas other reunions, like stuff blends together and I don't really remember anything, but like these are all going to become iconic fashion moments. Except for, I mean, Heather's is just like, I did not like Heather's when she was standing up. And now that she's sitting down, it's just kind of like, fine. It's more to do. Like, I'm paying more attention to like her styling, which I like more this go around than last time. But everyone else, like, it's like a shock to the system. But I like, that's what you got to do. You got to make a statement.
Like, in Roni, I remember Carol's like tan rag reunion.
I know exactly.
Like, don't remember anyone else's from that reunion. So Dan has a point.
Yeah, that is a really good point. My God. Speaking of points, I wanted to talk to you both about Tree and Louie, but I think this is going to be, I mean, I think it's going to be a little bit of a to be continued. I think I'm just going to use this as an excuse to get you both back because as the season goes on, there are going to be a lot of reveals and a lot of revelations. Maybe is there, speaking of the TLDR, is there a little bit of a thesis that you would both like to share about how you think that this will, how you think Teresa, a woman who has arguably more power than many, many housewives, do you think that this will play out in her favor? We're not going to talk about this because I said that we're not.
Okay, I have a thesis statement, which I've said on Come Through Queen, and I'm gonna share it with Andy's girls, people's couch. I think Jackie's frat party was a glimpse at a world where we can have fun without Teresa in the room. So like, if you're gonna throw a temper tantrum, so be it.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah. There was conflict.
Are we saying that her job is at risk, or like, ma'am, maybe don't tell us that I shouldn't have to show this stuff because we might just be looking at other people for the show?
I think what would be so funny and send her into a tailspin, which like she may or may not agree to, depending on like the mortgage payments that she has to make on this new house, is imagine bringing her on. It's like, okay, oh, you don't want to share stuff about your life? You're a friend of Zia Melissa.
Whoa, that is a take.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anything could happen.
I love it.
My mouth is like completely. Do you? Is there a world? Would it ever get to that point? She knows that, you know, She wants her bread to continue to be buttered.
Yeah.
Would you think that she would choose to walk away from the check for in order to keep Louis stuff off camera? Is there even room for more Louis content to be revealed? Is this not just a one season thing?
I mean, I am finding him interesting as a new player in the world. Like, I mean, mm-hmm. I think people have differing opinions on the Jersey husbands, but I think he like surprisingly is more camera ready than I thought he was going to be. Like he's engaging and talking and having conversations and not afraid of the camera, except like kind of afraid of the camera because he's waiting in the parking lot. But right. Yeah.
And I mean, like him trying to reconcile the two sides of the family seems pretty nice.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I know like everything that happened online like seems creepy, but what we've seen on the actual screen, I'm like, he seems okay.
I'm nodding. Okay. I wonder how much of this is Teresa being like, he's great and I want to protect him, and how much of this is Teresa being like, wait, I don't know how much of it is Teresa not wanting us to know stuff versus Teresa not wanting Teresa to know stuff
right.
that she'll then have to deal with. Like, I don't know what's behind this, which would answer the question of like, how long is this going to continue to go on?
Tough to tell.
I mean, has there ever been a to be continued on Andy's Girls like the one that we just did? Guys, we gave you a little consider that the trailer for the next
love that.
come through AG Kiki. Can you tell the listeners a little bit about Come Through Queen, about, you know, what you have been obsessed with discussing on your pod and the kind of content that they can expect to love on the Come Through Queen Patreon?
Sure. I mean, we go a little episode by episode. We focus on things that we're interested in. Like there was Celebrity Big Brother airing this past month. Mm. We had Teddy and Cynthia on there, and that was some riveting television with Cynthia Carson Kressley of Queer Eye Drag Race fame. Todrick, oh my God. We're very invested also in the Summer House, Winter House, cinematic universe.
Mm-hmm.
Love that.
Yeah.
It's to me, that's like the future of Bravo. It's like the new class.
Mm. Lindsay Hubbard, because, give her an apple, please.
And it's interesting, like, because they're all crossing over to each other's shows. So like, am I gonna have to start watching Southern Charm again? I don't know.
Mm.
Think that Lindsay, someone messaged me about that. I'm gonna unpack it on a Patreon episode that you guys can listen to literally right now. But do you think that Lindsay would ever be considered for New York?
I don't know if she'd be considered, but I think she would be a perfect candidate.
Mm. Yeah.
Like, especially if they want younger people. I think like she's already playing the Hamptons game, obviously. Like she's successful. Yeah. She's now got her successful boyfriends. Like I think it could happen. And she's like supremely watchable.
Mm.
Do you think that she would be considered in a world in which she should be, which I think is called the world, our world.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think that she would be considered as a complement to whatever cast is to come, or specifically as a replacement to Leah, who might be the closest contemporary to a Lindsay type? Very not similar, but just in terms of an idea from the production lens. What do you think is most
That is possible. A good question. I do think, like, if we're getting a big shakeup, I think she could work as a connector. Like, I could see her, I could see her first episode staying with Luann in the Hamptons and being like, oh, this is my friend Lindsay. I met around the Hamptons. Her boyfriend has stake in this company, Loverboy. We're going to do some Loverboy non-alcoholic teas.
Oh my God, the perfect collab.
That would be honestly, and Carl would pop up and Lou would flirt with Carl and she'd be like, well, fuck Adam. Like, this is my new person. Like, I just don't know that Bravo would ever take that chance.
Yeah,
I know.
Just don't know.
It's like that and making a child, a housewife, like a Lauren Manzo or a Brianna. Yeah, those are like,
or Brianna.
Those are the two like things that I bet you are like thoughts in their brain, but are a big jump to make.
Yeah, too big of a risk.
Yeah.
You know, there are a lot of new beginnings happening in the Housewives world and a lot of new shows and new characters, obviously, and new directions. And it will be fascinating to see that happen. And it would also be fascinating to see a housewife mother-daughter on the same season at the same time.
Yeah.
I mean, we've seen siblings, but that has not existed to this point and would be and is possible. Sure. It is not both realistic, but it is possible as well. Mm-hmm. And it would be, a new beginning like nothing else, as long as it's not fucking Avery Singer.
Oh, no.
We have one. I have capacity for zero stingers. So like two is too many. Listen, where can people follow you on social, potentially listening to the pod? Like, tell the AGs how they can get in touch, give you feedback, just oodles of love and some cash money at that Patreon. Like, tell us where they can follow you, reach out, all that good stuff. Listen to the pod, obviously, first and foremost.
Amazing. You can find everything at comethroughqueen.com. We have links to everything.
Yeah.
My God, so straightforward.
So easy.
Yes.
Instagram, Twitter, like Spotify, Apple Podcasts, all in one spot. Yeah.
Meanwhile, if you go to like andysgirls.com, I've never done that, but I can guarantee you that I don't think I recommend it. speaking though of AG news, listen, big news dropped today on Instagram while you guys are listening about AG 300, which will be discussed on the next episode. For now, Patreon supporters knew first, but go to my Instagram page at Dame Galley. Follow me if you're not already. Big news announcement came out today, the day that you're listening to this podcast. I'm so excited about it. I'm excited to talk more about it on the next episode. But for now, you gotta be a Patreon supporter or check on social. It'll take you 2 seconds to go to my Instagram and see it. It's I'm really, really, really happy about the celebration for AG 300. So I hope that you guys are all excited as well. And, you know, join the Andy's Girls Patreon. I'm about to do a Satchel Spectacular that'll also be up when you guys are listening to this. Got so many supersized satchels of gold, of course, AG lingo for your thoughts and feels, reactions, questions and concerns to all things Housewives, Bravo and more. Slide into my DMs on Instagram at Dame Galley or email me very, very long form theses by emailing andysgirlsshow@gmail.com. And a Satchel Spectacular is up there, as well as an hour and 20 minute Patreon exclusive episode called Inventing Noella with Ryan Houlihan, which is about 45 minutes of us yelling about Bill de Blasio, because we like to keep things topical here on the AG Patreon, and also some Orange County content. It's quite good. We get into inventing Noella. We do some inventing Louie. We have some ideas for future inventing eps. And it's a good one. So patreon.com/andysgirls, number one way to support the pod, get exclusive bonus eps, invites to special events and more. Guys, thanks so much for coming on AG. You know, I love talking with you. I just love it. I think you're both so fantastic. And I highly encourage people who enjoy listening to Andy's Girls to, regardless of whether someone's forcing you to listen to AG or not, I highly encourage that people listen to and follow Come Through Queen, because I think you guys are having such interesting, in-depth, fun conversations, and I really appreciate when you come on the pod, because I just honestly get a chance to have an hour and breathe. I really appreciate it. Thank you both for coming back on.
Thank you for having us.
My pleasure. Guys, on that note, AGs, you know, check out AG 300, let me know what you're thinking, and hope everybody's hanging in as best you can, and we will chat with you soon. Bye-bye.
Bye.